welcome to this week's edition of Victims of Fun. This is episode 24, as usual. We are live from Mr. Fujiwara's Top Ramen Shop in the Chiba District of Tokyo, right across from the Sailor Moon store. We have the jazz music going on right now. If you can hear it in the background, hopefully it's not messing with my audio levels. We're slowly turning into a jazz bar here at the ramen shop, which, okay, whatever. I want to thank the good folks at Anchor.fm for the easiest and best podcast software on the planet. Go to Anchor.fm and download it to your desktop. You could be podcasting in 10 minutes. All the tools are right there at your fingertips and very easy to use. You can monetize your podcast and make some money. They will distribute it to 7 or more podcast distribution networks, including Spotify. They'll hook you up with your advertisers, and it's completely free, which is fantastic. You can also download it to your mobile device of choice, Android or Apple. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, download it, hook it up to your phone, you'll be podcasting off your phone in 10 minutes. Podcasting remotely from wherever you are. You can be in your car, you can be on a boat, maybe you see some aliens. You want to podcast with the aliens, ask them why they're probing everybody. Very easy, very simple, very good to use. Highly recommend Anchor. Give a shout out to microphone company Blue for making the best microphones for podcasting or any sort of audio recording on the planet. This podcast runs solely on the Blue Snowball microphone. And again, I want to thank the fine folks at Apple. This podcast is exclusively created on an Apple MacBook Air M1. So I want to thank you very much to those three. How's everybody doing? It is a rainy night here in Tokyo. It's a nice rain going on, no thunderstorm or anything, but you know, this part of the world, we get rain quite a bit. It's quite nice. We got the, you know, when the jazz is going smooth and the rain's hitting the window, it's quite a nice little ambiance thing. So today is Prince Philip's funeral. Prince Philip, the consort of the Queen of England, died recently. He was 99 years old. And Prince Philip was a World War II veteran. Served in the Navy. Actually saved his ship during the invasion of Sicily. He was a pretty badass guy. I mean, he... What I liked about him was he threw the whole idea of political correctness right out the window. He didn't care. He was going to say what he wanted to say. He was going to joke the way he wanted to joke. And unlike a lot of the royals, and not just the royal family of England, but anywhere, you know, Prince Philip's the type of guy that would feel completely 100% at home in a pub drinking with a bunch of working guys. And for some reason, the British, I don't want to say common people because it sounds like an insult, but, you know, the non-elitist citizenry of the United Kingdom, they could relate to him. I mean, there were stories about him just going into a pub somewhere in London, you know, obviously with his security detail outside, but he would go in alone and just drink with people. And he was very big into the armed forces because he was a naval veteran, and so was the Queen was a veteran too. She was in the military in World War II. She was a mechanic. She was very good at fixing cars, apparently. And so Prince Philip used to visit the barracks of, like, you know, the Army, the Navy, Air Force, whatever, and keep them up till 2 a.m. in the mess halls, just, you know, having them falling over at laughter, telling stories about his many adventures. He was a keen driver. designed his own Land Rover for his funeral, believe it or not, because he loved Land Rovers. But he had a very caustic sense of humor, and he could make jokes about things that, if anybody else did it, they'd be like, oh my god, that's so racist and horrible, but just, he was the type of person that could say stuff like that and people would laugh. I might be messing the story up, but he was somewhere in the South Pacific, I want to say New Guinea, and he made a remark about, they were watching some native New Guinean or tribal like show that they put on. He turned to somebody and said, they're not going to eat us next, are they? And, yeah, everybody thought it was hysterical. And, you know, he would make comments about other nations, like, driving ability and stuff like that. And, you know, it was good-natured. He didn't mean anything by it. That's just the way he was, you know. And everybody liked him. But 99's a good age, you know. But yeah, you know, I remember when Reagan died, and you know, there's this big, huge deal, the big funeral, all the world leaders, you know, all the pomp and circumstance, and I remember Nancy Reagan up there in the coffin by herself, just with her head on the coffin, just in tears, and I remember saying, you know, afterwards that night where I was talking to somebody, I said, you gotta remember, I said, for all the pomp and circumstance and everything that went into Reagan's funeral, I said, at the end of the day, he was somebody's husband. He was somebody's father. He was somebody's grandfather. And as big of a loss as it was politically or socially to the world or to the country, to the family, they didn't lose a president. They lost their husband. They lost their father. They lost their grandfather. You know, I was young when my grandmother died, and it tore me to shreds. I can only imagine, you know, what the kids go through in a situation like this. And you tend to forget that when a famous person, whether it's a world leader or an actor or actress, dies. People tend to forget that they have family. There's somebody's kid, there's somebody's brother, a sister, a husband, a wife, or father, a grandfather, and those are the people that are going to suffer more than anybody. Like, just like when Robin Williams died, and, you know, the family was probably more upset than anybody. And, you know, people always forget, you know, they always forget stuff like that, you know, and Prince Philip. Imagine what the Queen is going through. I mean, they've been together 70 years or something. They've been together. They've never been apart since they met. And, you know, she puts on a brave face, you know, because she's a rock, basically. But in private, you know she's just, you know she's torn up and, you know, I feel bad for her because, you know, it's her husband. They've been around. They've been together forever and all that. But, you know, who does she have to confide in? I mean, her son is worthless. Both of them. One of her grandkids totally betrayed the entire family. You know, most of her friends are, she outlived. I mean, she probably just has, you know, William left, who seems to be the closest to her. Yeah, but who does she have to confide in? I mean, everybody else is gone. You know? Everybody she could trust anyway. But I have a feeling the Queen's gonna live forever. I mean, I think she's still alive because she doesn't want Charles to be king, and nobody does. So I think she's just gonna outlast him. But it's got to, you know, I'm sure when the Queen's alone in her room at night, that's probably when it's going to hit her. When nobody's watching and the press isn't there and there's nobody to see her lose her royal decorum, I remember when my father died. She'll, believe me, the Queen will break down in private, which is where it should be. At least for somebody like her. You know, but you tend to forget when you see stuff like that, when it's somebody famous or somebody well-known passing away, that they are somebody's loved one. Beyond being president, beyond being king or queen or beloved actor or actress, they are somebody's family member. And those are the ones they're going to feel it the most. You know? And it's a shame. But, you know, life goes on. Death is part of life. Well, it's not part of it. It's the end of it. But, you know, you just gotta... There ain't no way around it. You know? I mean, if I could get away with downloading my conscience into, like, a hard drive and shooting it in space for aliens to find, I'd do it. You know? I remember reading a short story once. This guy achieved immortality. And not just immortality where he, you know, wouldn't grow old, but he couldn't be killed. He couldn't be destroyed. He could literally stand in the middle of a black hole and nothing would happen to him. And it was kind of like, you know, well, I'm going to outlive the universe. For, you know, then the universe is... Yeah, I saw some video on YouTube where they said it's going to be like a quintillion, quadrillion, quintillion years, or whatever. And this guy was going to be there at the end to see it, and then the universe pops back into existence, and he's still there. And I remember thinking, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do all that time? And somebody in the book, the short story that I read, asked him, they said, well, what are you going to do for all this time that, you know, you're never going to die, you're just going to keep on going? And he's like, well, I'll find something. And I remember the last few sentences of the book, you know, before the story ends, he's on a beach somewhere on some alien planet. And the last couple sentences is something like, he finally stood up and took a deep breath and said, I finally did it. I finally counted every grain of sand on every planet in the universe. And that's how the story ended. So he started to count every grain of sand on every planet in the universe, and he managed to pull it off because of how long he could live. Yeah, I used to think about that. Would I want to live forever? Would I want to, like, not be able to be destroyed and just keep going and going? And I thought, well, I'd have to have the ability to travel. I wouldn't want to, like, live forever stuck on Earth. So I would need to be like Q from Star Trek. I could just go anywhere in the universe I want. So I'd have to be able to do that because I'd need to see stuff. You know, experience things. And I'm like, okay, well, do I need to eat? Do I need to drink? You know, I won't die, but will I get in a state where I can barely move because I'm starving to death and I'm just not dying? Like, what are the rules? Because you can be immortal, but still be royally messed up. Like, okay, I get in a fire and my entire body is fourth degree burned and I'm just not going to die, but I'm not going to heal. You know, my arms and legs get eaten off by a shark, and are they going to grow back? I mean, you know, I get stranded on a planet that's got no oxygen. Am I going to be in a perpetual, forever state of choking to death? You know, I'm on a planet where there's no food or water. Am I going to be in a state where I'm dehydrated and starving to the point of death, just not die? You know, am I still going to have dental issues and stuff? You know, so I need all that answered. I would need all that answered before I'd accept the immortality thing, because in my mind, if I'm going to do this, I don't want anything to happen to me. I don't want to be able to get sick. I don't want to need food. I don't want to need water, oxygen, or even sleep. I still want to be able to do those things. Like, I still want to eat, drink, and I kind of want to be able to sleep. I guess I could make myself sleep, but I don't need it. But I still want to be able to do it because it's a human thing. You know, and obviously I don't want to feel hot or cold because, you know, if I'm standing in the middle of the sun, I mean, it's going to be hot. And I remember having this conversation with somebody I worked with because I used to work in a place that was very slow. And we'd stand around and just come up with these hypothetical scenarios. And he was like, well, he said, you know, if you're going to do that, you have to have the ability to learn languages really quick. Because what if you end up in this alien civilization somewhere and you don't know how to talk to any of them? That's going to make life a bit difficult, even if you are immortal. So it may take you 1,000 years to learn their language. Yeah, that's a good point. I have to be able to learn their language, you know? And what about shape-shifting? You know, if I'm going to be human everywhere I go, I'm going to stand out. You know, do I have the ability to change my appearance or create a holographic image over myself to look like one of them? I mean, you know, what if I go to a alien civilization that, you know, is 100% peaceful and great, but they just have this thing where they kill anybody that doesn't look like them? Well, you know, they can't kill me, but I don't want to be the center of attention for that. You know, maybe there's something cool there I want to see. I don't want aliens chasing me while I'm trying to take in the tourist sites. So there's a lot of questions about, you know, the parameters of immortality. You know, what's it going to be like? What am I going to have to deal with? What about money? You know, if you're immortal and you end up in some alien civilization, you want to buy some stuff. I mean, you have no money. But how are you going to get it? I mean, you're immortal. I guess you could steal it. But, you know, that's kind of not cool. Yeah, I don't know. It's like we used to have this conversation about, you know, if you could have a superpower, you know, what superpower would it be? You know, and it's like, well, I'd like to fly. And, well, okay, well, if you can fly, wouldn't you get cold, you know, zooming around through the atmosphere and stuff, because it gets cold? And, you know, there was always questions like that. Okay, well, I can turn invisible. Okay, well, you still have clothes. Does anything you wear turn invisible or no? Because if not, you have to run around naked. If you're invisible and you eat something, can they see the food go inside of you because you're invisible? Or is it just going to be a bunch of half-digested cheesesteak walking, you know, floating through the air? You're invisible, but you're not... oh God, what's the word? What's the word where, see, now my brain just stuck. Okay, so, you're invisible, but you still can have physical contact with things. So, it's like, you know, I'm invisible, I can't cross the road because I can still get hit by a truck and killed. And then they can't see me, but they can't pass through me. So, you know, what good is being invisible if you have to be naked and you can still be physically injured? I mean, there's no point to it, you know, because, you know, and dogs will still be able to smell and sense you and everything, and you're probably still getting off body heat, so infrared cameras and stuff are going to pick you up, and the government's going to know you have this power, and they're going to come after you, and eventually they're going to get you, because they're going to figure out how to do it, because in order for you to be invisible, you got to be naked, and, you know, there you go, translucent, or transparent, or whatever. What the hell is that word? Yeah, well, you know, that's what happens when you get old, you forget things. So, you know, if you can fly, you'll need a pressure suit after a while because, you know, up where airplanes are, it's cold, and the higher you go, the less pressure there is, and, you know, you're going to explode or something. Why do you think that guy who jumps out from the edge of space, he's got the spaceman suit on? Because, you know, you'll die if you don't, you know? If you could read people's minds, you know, can you shut that off? Or, like, are you reading their mind and getting everything in one shot? Or can you pick the memories apart? So there's always a There's always a downside to every superpower. And there was a movie like that called Chronicle, but it was made by Max Landis, and he's like a rapist person. So you shouldn't go see that movie, because people like that don't need to be supported. But I mean, what are the downsides of really having like a real superpower? Oh yeah, well, I can be like Aquaman. I can breathe underwater. Okay, well, guess what? You still can get the bends. You can still go down too far and get crushed by the depth. Sharks are still going to eat you. I mean, it's not like you can just jump off a boat and swim down to the Titanic and be like, whoa, look at this. I mean, you're going to be dead before you get down there. You know? Oh, I have super strength. Look at me. I can throw stuff around. Okay, well. Okay, you have super strength. You know, maybe that's a good power. You know, I can't see any drawback to that other than you better be able to control it or you're going to be hurting people. See, if I had super strength, I'd be a boxer. Seriously, I would just be a boxer. I wouldn't even work out. I would just show up and be like, yeah, I want to box. And I'd start just knocking people out. And, you know, you get your title shot and boom. You keep winning everything in one punch, like One Punch Man. And you just, like, you know, you keep boxing. And as long as you can hit the guy. You know, if he hits you first, I mean, you're super strong, but does that mean you can take a hit? Because if, you know, if I get in a ring with somebody like Mike Tyson in his prime, and my punch doesn't connect and he tags me first, I'm probably going to go down like a sack of, you know, wet cement. So you gotta be able to hit the guy first, because, you know, just because you have super strength doesn't mean you can tank everything thrown at you. But what if you have super speed, like the Flash? You know, I mean, you go fast enough, there's friction, you're gonna catch fire and burn. I mean, can you stop on a dime? Because if you can stop on a dime, there's like a lot of inertia. It could break your ankles. It could like shatter your bones. I mean, so do you have the ability to just stop on a dime and not get hurt? Do you have instinctive reflexes where if you're running at, you know, 10 times the speed of sound to get out of everybody's way? Because they're not going to be able to react to you. So there's always a drawback with that stuff, you know? And plus, you gotta remember something too. If you have these superpowers and you're using them in public, government's gonna find out eventually, and they're gonna come after you, because like anything, the government's gonna want it to weaponize it. And then, you know, what are you gonna do? Eventually they're gonna catch you. Because, like I said, there's drawbacks to every superpower if you're looking at it in a realistic thing. But they're going to get you eventually. And, you know, they're going to want to see how you got your superpowers. And then, yeah, they're going to try to weaponize you, because that's what they do. Yeah, so, I mean, there's drawbacks to that, what type of thing. I think a really cool superpower would be, like, the ability to win the lottery whenever you wanted. See, that's cool. It's like, I remember Batman, like, when the Flash asked Batman, like, what's your superpower? And he goes, I'm rich. Well, I mean, really, that's the best superpower of all, because if you're hyper, hyper wealthy, you can afford to buy the things you need to accomplish what you need to be doing without you actually doing it. So that would be my superpower. I would have the ability to just make money in any way I wanted, as much as I wanted. That's my superpower. I could wake up in the morning with a dollar, and at the end of the day, I've turned it into 500 million. Simple as that. You know, the government would probably... I don't know. Being hyper wealthy could have its problems, but you're hyper wealthy, so you could buy your way out of everything. I'd buy my own island and declare it its own country. I'd probably call it like the Union of Steve or something. Yeah, I'm sure there's some corrupt nation somewhere with a couple of islands off its coast that, you know, enough money to the right people, they'd sell it to me and recognize its independence. You know? I mean, not that I'd want to belong to the UN, because the UN's like one of the most corrupt organizations on the planet, but, you know. Yeah, that's my superpower. I am hyper wealthy. That's my superpower. Hyper wealthy. That's me. You could call me Captain Capitalist or something like that. So what would your superpower be and why? Hey, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com, or you could follow us on Facebook at Victims of Fun. We're on Instagram at Victims of Fun, and we are now on Twitter. I don't know why, but we're on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter at, you guessed it, Victims of Fun. And like I say every episode, if you have something you want plugged, whether you are an independent artist, meaning musician or author or poet or playwright or, you know, actor or actress, maybe have an acting reel you want people to look at, a YouTube channel, just email it to me and I'll come up with something. I'll plug you. I don't care. I mean, it's the whole point of this is networking and helping each other out. Maybe you have some really cool invention. Maybe you grew a vegetable that suspiciously looks like a body part and you want me to talk about it. I don't care. I'm always looking for stuff like that. If you have your own podcast and you want to cross-promote, again, email, contact me, whatever, I will do what I can. So it's all about helping each other. I'm trying to grow my audience because I want to make money. Money. That's what I want. And you know what? You can give me money by hitting the listener support button and throw me some cash. You could patron me for $5 a month. And for $5 a month, with enough people, I'd be able to pay for some better podcasting equipment. I'll have some sound effects, maybe a mixing board. And make it sound more professional. Yeah. Start having some guests. Instead of Mr. Fujiwara is always hinting he wants to be on the show, but, you know, what am I going to talk to him about? Well, hey, Mr. Fujiwara, what's up there with the ramen? Alright, so we're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with more Victims of Fun. Stay tuned. Welcome back from the break. It's noisy. It's getting noisy here in Mr. Fujiwara's top ramen shop. Here in the Chiba District of Tokyo, right across from the Sailor Moon store. This is Victims of Fun, episode 24. We're back from the break. And it's still raining here. Yeah, it's a nice rainy night in Tokyo. I don't even know if I want to call this place a ramen shop anymore. I'm starting to think it's more of a coffee place that serves ramen. I'm not entirely sure what to call it. You know, whatever it is, it's got some nice... Man, I tell you, this better not be messing my audio levels. Because, you know, I only do one take of these things. You know, I don't need to be doing multiple takes and stuff like that. That's kind of... kind of weird, but you know, I guess it is what it is. That's what people say anyway, because there's nothing to do to change the situation that you're in at the moment. So I got this Pokemon Go thing, and you know, everybody knows what Pokemon Go is. It's on your phone, and you walk around, and you know, you battle Pokemon and stuff like that. And A lot of adults play it for whatever reason. I got into it because when I was, when I had those issues with my legs and everything, when I had the flushing bacteria, one of the things that doctors were telling me is that I had to do a lot of walking to build up the strength in my legs again, because, you know, it had wrecked my muscles, my lymph system and everything in my legs, and they're like, you know, you need to walk a lot, get the circulation going, get the lymph system functioning, build the stamina up in your legs again, because you don't want to end up in a walker or a wheelchair or anything. So, and, you know, I'm the type of person that needs motivation to do something. You know, you gotta pay me or something to get me to do most things. So a friend of mine said, but why don't you do that Pokemon Go thing everybody's doing? I'm like, well, what about Pokemon Go? What kind of, you know, little kid crap is that? And he's like, no. So more adults play it than kids because you have to walk in order to get to these Pokemon gym stops. Gym, they're called. And in Pokestops and everything, where the Pokemon are and all the stuff you need for the game, he said it encourages you to go out in public. And so, you know, I got the game, I downloaded it, and I pull up the map, and there's Pokestops everywhere, like as far as where I was living. And it got me walking, because I would go to the first gym, I'm like, oh, there's another one, let me go to that one. Okay, I got this, let me go to this one. Ooh, this Pokemon's over here, let me go get that. And next thing I knew, over a course of, and it tracks how many miles you're walking. And next thing I know, I was doing like, you know, 10 miles a day, walking around chasing Pokemon, and I'm like, okay, this is like a silly little Pokemon collecting game, but damn, it got me out walking. And you would see crowds of people running around chasing these Pokemon with their kids, and I'm talking like people of all different ages, all different ethnicities, all different body types and conditions. I was seeing young kids out there, old people, I'm talking like 80-something years old, because it got them out of the house and it got them walking. People in wheelchairs, people at walker. I mean, it's weird, because when I would see people would gather at it, there's a thing in the game called a raid where a boss monster shows up at the gym, and you have to, and one person can't just beat this thing. You have to have a bunch of people come in and fight at the same time. And people would show up to do the raid because it would broadcast on the Pokemon Go network, hey, there's going to be a raid in 20 minutes at this gym. And it would broadcast it to everybody in the area on all their phones. And that way it gave people a chance to get over there to get ready to fight this boss monster. Because if you beat the boss monster, you can actually get the boss monster as a Pokemon and some other stuff. And people would show up, and what I started noticing was that people were banding together to do this game that I think under a lot of situations would never associate with each other. Different religions, different colors, different, you know, gender identities, everything. Nobody cared. Everybody cared about beating the crap out of this giant, you know, crab monster, or whatever the boss of the gym was. It was a unifying thing, because, you know, everybody playing it, you know, nobody cared what you were, who you were. You would just go and do it, and it got people walking. I mean, there are stories online of people who've lost like 200 pounds walking around chasing these Pokemon everywhere, because it got them out walking. And it got me out walking. And it's, you know, the condition I have can't be cured. It's a lifetime debilitating condition that you can only manage. You can't ever cure it. No, there's no medicine, there's no surgery. You just gotta keep on walking and keep on getting your legs moving so that your lymph system can function. It's something I've accepted in my life. You know, whatever. But it's amazing to me how certain things like that can bring different aspects of society together. And there's a... It's funny because if you go on YouTube, there's a bunch of Pokemon in the Hood videos. And they're African-American people from America who live in the Hood. And they play Pokemon. And it's hysterical. Because they play up the whole living in the Hood thing. And, you know, it's you have to watch it. Just do a YouTube search on it. It's incredibly funny. But, I mean, my point is, if you see people like that, and, you know, your racial stereotype thing goes off, and you're like, oh God, look at them, they're gangbangers. Look what... But they're not pulling guns out. They're pulling their phones out chasing Pokemon. Because they got really into it. And, see, I love stuff like this. Because it shows that for everybody's differences, there's a lot of things people have in common. And a lot of people like chasing Pokemon around. Now, this doesn't... I've met people that take this game way too seriously. I used to work with somebody who... knew every stat for every Pokemon you could ever get and would literally map out the area and go drive to take these gyms down or whatever with his girlfriend. Now, I mean, they're really, really into it. Knew that if you're going to fight this Pokemon, you need to use this Pokemon. Unless the weather is this, then you need this Pokemon, you need this attack. I mean, just really, 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 really into the game. Which is great. I mean, if that makes you happy, fine. Me, you know, I don't care. Oh, look, I'll just pick this Pokemon to battle him. I win. If I don't, I don't. It gets me walking. That was the whole thing. Was to, you know, get out walking out. You know, back when I was a kid, when there was no social media, no internet, no nothing, that's all we did was go outside and run around the neighborhood and, you know, do things, go in the woods, play army, you know, whatever. And people don't do that anymore. Yeah, everybody's glued to their computer or glued to their phone or playing their video games, and nobody goes outside and does anything anymore. And Pokemon Go got people out of their houses. It got people into the community. And I remember a lot of small businesses, mom and pop places, would set up a Pokemon stop, a Pokestop. Pokestop isn't a gym, it's a thing that's at a landmark or at a business, and you go there and on their screen you spin it, and it'll give you gifts and stuff and power-ups, and, you know, you get experience for it, and there's always Pokemon hanging around it that you can try to catch. And a lot of mom-and-pop places were... there's a whole process to submit an application for it, and a lot of mom-and-pop places, to drum up business, would get themselves a Pokestop. And then the Pokemon people would show up and spin the stop, and, you know, if it was a pizza place or an ice cream parlor or a bookstore, 9 times out of 10, they went in and patronized it. Okay? I remember I worked at a job that had a Pokemon gym, an actual gym where they would have the boss monsters and everything in their parking lot. And they'd set it up on purpose to bring people in, and they actually would ask when people came in and to the business, you know, what brought you here? And, you know, at least 10 times a week, oh, you had a Pokemon gym, and I came here for that, and, you know, now I want to see what you have. And they would end up buying stuff, and that's, you know, it's good. You know, so it I mean, there were some problems with it. Somehow a Pokestop got set up at Auschwitz, the camp in Poland, and it has such a horrible reputation. That probably wasn't a good idea to have a Pokestop there. There was a Pokestop somehow that got set up on the DMZ zone between North and South Korea. God only knows how that got there. But there it was. It was there for a while. there's some that are literally in the middle of the deserts and the steppes of Mongolia that you have to travel like 4 days to get to. Don't know how they ended up there, but they did. And so there's a Pokestop. I believe there's a Pokestop at the North Pole and at the Antarctica scientific station, I believe, that they're down there. And the thing about that is you can't remotely access those. Like, so, say you're in Cleveland and, oh my god, yeah, there's a Pokestop in Antarctica. You have no way of spinning that thing. You actually have to be within a certain distance of the Pokestop, and it's not even measured in miles, it's measured in feet. I think you have to be within 50 feet or 100 feet of a Pokestop to be able to access it to do what you have to do. I know they shortened it because of the pandemic, like the distance. But there's no way to remotely go down there and do it. I mean, I'm sure if you know how to hack stuff and everything, you could probably figure out how to trick the phone into thinking you're in Antarctica. But, so, you know, there's things like that. And a lot of times, Pokemon only appear in certain locations. So, like, there's things in Mongolia that I could never catch living where I'm living. So what you'll do is you'll trade. So you'll go online, and there's websites devoted to this, and you'll find somebody who, hey, I'm Genghis, and I live in Mongolia, and I've got these Pokemon here, but I have extra of them. Now, I need this Pokemon, and this Pokemon's only available in Cleveland. So anybody in Cleveland want to swap for one of these things from Mongolia, let me know, and you can do it. Because there's certain Pokemon in certain locations you'll never get unless you're there, or you swap. But the whole point of it is it got people walking, which is good, because, you know, nobody goes outside anymore and does anything like they did when I was kids. I mean, my God, when I was a kid, I'm surprised we survived it. We were jousting on our BMX bikes and shooting each other with BB guns, and we survived. Drinking water right out of the hose tap on the side of the house. Ugh. And now apparently Child Protective Services shows up if you just have your kids playing in your backyard because, oh my God, you can't do that without a man, just whatever. The world is turning into a frightful bunch of, it's horrifying. It's really upsetting what this is turning into, type of thing. But, life marches on. But still, what are you gonna do? But yeah, the Pokemon thing got me into walking again, which is good because I kind of like my legs. I don't want them cut off. Even though my uncle said he'd build me my uncle's a retired machinist, and I remember he told me, if they cut your legs off, I could design something much better than you'll ever get from rehab. I'll make them metal, I'll put spikes on them, and anybody gives me any crap, you can just spike them at you. It'll look like Iron Man. I'm like, oh God, no. Put the bottle of wine down and just do not design me a pair. No. Even though that would be insanely cool. If you could put rockets on them, I could fly. But no. I think I'll keep my legs as long as I possibly can. But yeah, Pokemon. But anyway, Tokyo is full of Pokestops. Like, well, I mean, Pokemon's from Japan, but there's Pokestops everywhere, gyms everywhere, and there's, I mean, literally right on top of each other. I can only imagine what it's like living in, like, Central African Republic, and there's, like, one Pokemon gym in the whole country. But, I don't know, I've got, what's interesting? I've got on my, the thing, too, about Pokemon Go is the people you're friends with that you can send gifts to back and forth and stuff, you never know their real name. and all you know is where they live. But you never know their real name. There's no way of finding out their real name. And there's no way to communicate with them. And the company that... Niantic, I think they're called, that runs Pokemon Go, they do that on purpose. It's so older people can't communicate with younger people on the game. Because, you know, you have the whole Jeffrey Epstein, you know, Illuminati child pedophile ring going on around the world, and they don't want people to be able to use Pokemon Go to catch children. So, the people you're trading gifts back and forth with on Pokemon Go, that could be a 12-year-old kid for all you know, or a 90-year-old man. You have no way of knowing, and you have no way of communicating with them. So it's really one of the safest, if not the safest game a kid can play, because I've got no way of knowing who's on the other end of that thing, and they've got no way to talk to each other, or even finding anybody's identity. It's impossible. But I've got, it's cool, I've got a bunch of friends in the Czech Republic, because I used to live there, so I have Pokemon players from the Czech Republic on my friends list that, you know, we trade back and forth. Got some in the United States, I have one that's in my hometown in New Jersey, where I grew up, which is cool, no idea who it is, obviously. I have one in Israel, which is cool. I got some in Brazil, Portugal, a few in Italy, one in Liechtenstein, which is kind of cool, and I have a friend who's in Myanmar, Burma, and when the whole Myanmar, I mean, there's still issues there, but when the whole coup happened and everything, I was really worried about this person. I don't know who they are, I don't know if they're a guy or a girl, whatever. I'm like, God, I hope this person's okay. And even during the coup and everything, he or she, you know, is still out there collecting Pokemon. So, whoever this person is, they're perfectly fine during all this. So, which is good. That makes me happy. I had made... You can go on the internet and there's... places where you can go where people post their Pokemon names and, hey, I'll be your friend. Again, no real information's tied to it. So it's like, hey, I live in this country. Here's my Pokemon handle. Blah, blah. And there was one from Iran. And I befriended the person, but they haven't been on for a while. So I'm like, uh-oh. But I got one from Japan. I got one from Singapore. I got more than one Japan, I think. How many people I have live from Japan here? 3, 4, I don't know. Singapore. I'm trying to think. Where else? So far that's what I have. But it's cool. You know, I like it. But yeah, I was worried about the one from Myanmar, but. They're still posting, they're still collecting stuff and sending me gifts, so... You know, it'd be hysterical if it turns out the person I was friends with from Myanmar is like the head of the military junta that overthrew the government. I mean, that would be hysterical. Like, he's there, yes, I'm in charge. Oh, wait. Wait, look at this. I got a Pokemon trade going on here. I mean, just, that would be the most hysterical thing. It's like, because you never know who's on the other end of these video games. I remember reading that, what's her name? From That 70s Show, she did that movie with Natalie Portman where they had a lesbian love scene. Mila Kunis. She plays World of Warcraft. Like, nobody knows it's her. And she plays in a clan of World of Warcraft. I think, I don't know if she plays Alliance or the Horde, but she's been playing forever. And she says, you know, her own clanmates don't even know it's her. She said, but she's been playing the game forever. So you never know. You could have been talking to Mila Kunis. Vin Diesel is a huge Dungeons & Dragons nerd fanatic. I mean, legit. Like, the the official Dungeons and Dragons, I think, guide or biography or some big book that they wrote, Vin Diesel actually wrote the foreword to it. Because apparently he's an expert on the game. And he still plays. Like, I don't know who he plays with, and he won't say, but I think he's got, like, it's just a group of people that he still plays with. But he's a big-time D&D player. Cody Rhodes, the son of Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, Cody Rhodes, the wrestler, is in AEW. He is such a big Legends of Zelda fanatic that he actually used to come out with the Triforce logo on his trunks and everything. And he's huge into that. A lot of pro wrestlers actually are into video games and stuff. But Cody is apparently really into that. Like big time. So you never know who's on the other end of that, that video game. Imagine that, you're playing Dungeons and Dragons against Vin Diesel. Well, he doesn't play the computer stuff, because any D&D player will tell you the computer D&D games aren't the same thing. And there's one I remember who was really into Warhammer. I can't remember who it is, but it's an A-lister. I don't want to say it's The Rock, but it was somebody like him that's really, really into Warhammer and, like, supposedly has a whole 2 rooms in his house dedicated to... I mean, I'm talking Warhammer the board game, not any of the video stuff. Like, there's Warhammer video games and everything like that, and they're fine, but the real Warhammer people are into the Warhammer, the lore, the books and everything, in the board game itself. And this person is so into it that they have, like, 2 rooms in their house dedicated to, like, all the figures and the boards and the maps and the books and everything. I mean, you know, if you remember the whole Benghazi incident where all those people were killed in Benghazi, Ambassador Stevens, who was murdered by the terrorists there, Ambassador Stevens actually played EVE Online and was in a guild or a group on EVE Online, and actually posted, like, was actually playing the game the day before it all went down, and had made a remark that things here are getting a bit dicey, I might not be on for a couple days, and then it gets killed the next day. And yeah, that took everybody by surprise. But EVE Online's a big scam anyway. So, I've always said EVE Online was a scam for money laundering, because it's the only online game where you can take their in-game currency and have it translated to real-world cash. Like, nobody else allows you to do that. But EVE, you can, and I always said that EVE is money laundering. For either the government or the CIA or for drug cartels, but... yeah, there's just no way. That's definitely EVE. EVE is a total, absolute scam. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. Big money laundering thing. You know, I have an EVE beta account. When the game was in beta, you could get an account to test the game out, and I got one. And the game's okay. I still have it. I still have that account. And, you know, every couple of years I will log in just to see what's going on and look at my stuff. And wouldn't mind selling it. I could probably get a lot of money for it because it's a beta account. It's rare. It's old. The game's impossible to play because everybody that's been playing the game since the beginning over the past few years, they are so far ahead of anybody starting that people starting will never be able to catch up, because like in most online games, when you hit a certain level and a certain cap, you can't get any stronger, you can't accumulate more power, it's impossible, there's a limit. EVE Online's the only game where that's not possible, where you can just keep going and going and going, and you become so overpowering that anybody new has absolutely no chance of playing this game unless they stay in the protected area. Because the minute they leave the protected area where nobody can attack you, you're going to get killed. And people will purposely set up right outside the protected areas to jump people, new players who leave, and kill them on purpose. And if you complain, the official stance of the game company and the administrators is, well, that's part of the game, so deal with it. So, yeah, you don't even bother playing it. But I really don't play stuff like that anymore because, you know, I got too many other things going on. But back in the day, you know, that's, you know, I did that. I mean, the only game I really play anymore is Unreal Tournament 2004. It's a shooting game. It just relieves my stress and my Pokemon Go. But most of my stuff is devoted to the podcast and to other things. But, I'm still trying to get the Twitch thing up and running, and I still can't figure it out. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I don't know. Again, I don't want to be on camera. I wish I could, like, get a virtual avatar that could just be me on camera. I'm like, this is me, you know, deal with this. But then, when I go to the Spotify Podcast Awards, you know, I'm going to have to show up. If, you know, if I get nominated. Yeah, I gotta get listeners first. You know, that's the thing. You gotta get listeners. Without listeners, you really, there's no point. But, what are you gonna do? And I think that's gonna be it for Victims of Fun this week. Or this episode. This episode. And, well, thank you all for listening. I hope you have an incredible rest of the day or rest of the evening, whatever it is you're doing. Just remember, you go to anchor.fm or Google Play or Apple App Store and download Anchor, install it. You can be up and podcasting by yourself in 10 minutes. Remember, you can email Victims of Fun. Send us your praise or your hate. victimsoffun@mail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Victims of Fun. Follow us on Twitter, Victims of Fun. Follow us on Instagram, Victims of Fun. Hit the listener support button and you can start sending me some cash because I would like cash. Send me some money. You could send us, why don't you send me $5 a month? I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. Anybody that supports me for $5 a month or more, you'll get a shout out on the podcast. If you got something you want shouted out, maybe your kid just got an A in his report card, or maybe you got a promotion at work, or I don't know, maybe you finally got your wife to dress up like Sailor Moon, you know? I'll talk about it on the air. I don't care. So hit that support button. Remember, you can find Victims of Fun on Spotify and Caster and any other great podcast distribution networks. And thank you to Mr. Fujiwara for letting us broadcast again from the Ramen Jaws Bar here in the Chiba District, Tokyo, right by the Sailor Moon store. And I appreciate everybody that listens to me. And I hope you all have a wonderful night or day. Remember, the key to this world is to love each other. Okay? And make sure you love each other. So, I will talk to you soon. Y'all have a good evening. Peace!